On this episode of Still Loading, if you don't, I'll crush them. Alright guys, this is Josh.
And this is Justin.
And welcome back to the next episode of Still Loading on our new location. Today's topic is going to be Final Fantasy, but specifically Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9, the PlayStation era. I know Final Fantasy Tactics was on it, and Square, probably some others that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head.
The Crystal Chronicles, maybe?
Or no, that was GameCube.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But, so we're just covering specifically 7, 8, and 9. Before we dive into those games, I'm just giving at least a little bit of backstory about why I personally wanted this topic, and then Justin will explain his. For me, the first Final Fantasy I ever played was 7, and so because of that, I decided to try 8 and then try 9, and I loved all three of them. Not quite equally, but still some of my top favorite games. Justin?
Yeah, Final Fantasy IX was the first one I've played of those three, and then, yeah, same here, I played 7 and 8 as well. All three of them fantastic. The only one I haven't beaten, which is on my list, is 8.
Well, that's polarizing.
Yeah, I actually was trying to play 8 on an emulator and had some issues after the first disc, so that's kind of why I stopped there.
Do you not have it on the hard copy?
No, the collector in me needs it, though. So
you can borrow it if you want to actually sit down and try it out, because I have
need it.
Okay. You need it. Okay.
Can't just borrow that game.
we are just discussing some of our more favorite things about these games, some of our favorite, least favorite. This is in no way a review or a critical analysis of these games. It's much more of a nostalgia-fueled, because that's kind of what our podcast goes for. We like to talk about the nostalgia we feel for games, and maybe other people feel for games if we don't know more about it.
Exactly, and honestly, our opinions won't really matter to you that much, because you're going to have your own opinions on
exactly.
games.
And people who are listening to this probably have already played these games and have their strong opinions on them anyway.
Exactly.
So we are just prefacing this right now. This is no way a review or some kind of critical analysis, in-depth ideas on it. You know what I'm saying. Like, we're not trying to say which is better, which is worse. This is just personal opinions.
Because we all know Final Fantasy IX is the best one out of all of them.
But so, alright guys, without further ado, going into Final Fantasy VII.
Woo!
Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, man.
What a glorious game.
I remember the first time you were playing that, and you actually brought it to my house, and we're having, like, just a late-night shenanigans mm-hmm. fun, and you were... Oh, the desert area. You were so over-leveled, because you were trying to figure out how to defeat this one boss. So you're like, I can't beat him, so I'm just gonna level up a bunch. And you go to fight the boss again, and you just annihilated it. That was like, it was perfect, because I've never seen, like, I've played so many games over the years, and I've seen, like, I've had friends try all these games. I've never seen someone been so enthralled in a game the first time they played it as I've seen you play Final
really?
Fantasy VII. Yes.
I never knew that.
It was
legit.
Like, I don't want to give, like, too much of the story away, but the critical scene in the beginning.
Spoilers for anyone who has not played it. We will be probably speaking about spoilers for all these games within this podcast. So, if you don't want to know anything about them at all, turn it off now.
Yeah.
Because, it's hard to talk about these games without getting into something of the story. So if you want to save the story, if you want to save your Final Fantasy virginity of these stories, not have that popped, then...
And I would recommend not getting it popped.
Yes, listen, like, stop the podcast, which we should never say during a podcast because we want people to listen, but play these games and then come back and listen to what we think about them and our opinions of them. So, as you were saying, Justin... Yes.
So, I before this, I remember you playing it, and the scene where Sephiroth comes down with the sword.
Kills Aerith.
Yes.
Aerith, whatever you prefer.
Yes.
Depending on the release you had.
I remember being there for that for you, and just witnessing the, like, heartache coming down from the top of the screen. And I'm just like, oh, he's hooked. He is hooked. He is going to beat this game, and he's going to love it.
I was so... The only thing that saddened... The thing that saddened me most about Aerith, because I played it with Aerith. I'm going to say Aerith. I know people might have a crazy fit that I'm not saying Aerith. Whatever. Aerith, when she died, someone spoiled that for me. It was your friend Steve.
That's right.
He spoiled that for me. He told me right off the bat that she died. I don't think he did it on purpose. He was saying, like, oh, because I was talking about it around him. He's like, oh, when Aerith died, I cried. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, God, I was so mad. So it still was emotional, but I feel like if I hadn't seen that coming, it would have been a lot more impactful.
Yeah. When people think about that game... Usually that's, like, the first thing that pops in our head, because it is, as far as I can remember, like, you've had deaths in other video games, for sure. Like, Final Fantasy II, if we're staying in Final Fantasy area, like, you know...
I remember I'm in the middle of playing that.
Yeah, so I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but, you know, like, there are people that die in games, and, you know, back then the graphics weren't...
As
like,
good.
Yeah, like, you could get sucked in the story, but it was really hard to portray that emotion.
You really had to use your imagination in the older Final Fantasies to get to understand the emotion they were trying to get across.
Right.
Which, before Justin goes on, I have not played anything pre-Final Fantasy VII as of now. I'm currently working my way through 2, and then I will then go to 3. Well, 2/4, 3/6. I'm going to work my way to 3 then. And then I'm going to try a bunch of the others. The actual 2 and 3, well, I don't need to play 2, because I have 3 and 4 on the DS, which 4 on the DS is the same as 2 on the Super Nintendo,
yes.
So I don't need to play that one, because I'm playing through it now on the Super Nintendo, but I will play the actual Final Fantasy 3, not the 3 that was released in America, which is actually Final Fantasy 6.
Yes.
God, that's confusing, but anyway, sorry, go on.
So yeah, we had to use our imaginations for... these kind of things in the storyline, but 7 being kind of that first leap to the next generation of consoles, like the 3D graphics, the cutscenes, like to see that, like, was just, it blew your mind the first time you saw it.
Yeah.
Because you weren't expecting it, like, even if you knew about it, the scene still kind of caught you off guard, because it's just out of nowhere, and it's just so impactful,
because you kind of it at the same time, while it is sad, because from a character standpoint it's a sad part, obviously, because Aerith dies.
Yeah.
However, it makes it even more sad, because you spent that whole first disc, which is the longest disc,
yep,
in the whole game, building her up.
Yep.
Like, leveling her up.
Yep. Buying her and, items, equipment, like,
and then she dies.
Yep.
She just dies. And I was always wondering, like, I remember when I first played it, I got her you get her ultimate weapon, like, crazy early on compared,
yep,
to everyone else's, and I'm like, why does this one have so many materia slots?
Yep.
I don't understand. That was another thing, in thinking of the gameplay, though, materia. That,
yeah,
was the first time, because like I said, it was my first Final Fantasy, so that was the first time a game kind of had the concept of magic spells to me, and I had never played a game like Final Fantasy VII before,
yeah.
So the whole materia and summons thing was, like, the coolest thing for me. I used summons all the time, which, now that I look back on it, like, when I replay 7, I've beaten 7 multiple times. It's one of my favorite games. I will never understand why I attach magic to Cloud. Because right. I don't use it. The only spell I use for Cloud on Cloud is Cure. But you can have Cure on everybody.
Yep.
Which is smart. Like, that's what you should have. But I don't know why I have any... Because you don't need to use magic in that game.
No.
At all. With the exception of the first boss, which tells you you need lightning to beat him.
Yep.
There might be some others, but generally you can just brute force your way through that whole game. So, there's not much... It's a great game, but there's not a lot of strategy required in it.
No.
It's, with the exception... However, did you see... There's a video... This isn't really strategy-based, but you know how Vincent, his weapon's damage is based off of how many times he's killed an enemy with it.
Yep.
So there's that glitch where if you kill, like, thousands of enemies with, like, his ultimate weapon or whatever, and then go fight Ruby or Emerald weapon at the end, one-shot him.
Yep, one-shot.
Instant kill. But, like, I don't... There's a way that, it, like, somehow it breaks the 9,999 damage limit.
Yeah, you can glitch it. Yeah.
I don't know how it works, but, yeah, it's fascinating.
Oh, man. Yeah, and... Even still, like, just having magic in that game, like, the reason why you were attached to Cloud was because it was badass.
For anyone wondering, that sound was our pop filter just falling.
Learn how to put it on better.
I did, I swear. I forget it. I'll just hold it up and I don't feel like making any more noise. So, go on, Justin.
Manual labor for Cowboy here. Yeah, and that's the thing, like, with 7, it was... You know, not just using the magic, because that was cool, even though you didn't need it, but it was finding the summons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Knights of the Round Table, like, you would just spend hours to get it, because
it was... Chocobo breeding, man.
Yeah.
Chocobo breeding.
Mm. It was just so satisfaction.
Satisfying.
Satisfying.
There you go.
I can speak.
You know, use your words.
I can English. To get that summon, because it was like, this is a whole new summon I can watch. And watching the summon for the first time was awesome.
Yes,
I mean,
really
after
was.
A while, it was like, alright, okay, skip.
I get it. Can you skip it in Final 7?
I'm trying to remember. I don't...
You can't in 8, which we will get to.
Yes.
That is a bit... I have a lot... While 8 is one of my favorites, it actually was my favorite for a while, I have a lot of things to say about it that are negative, so trust me, I will give it... I will give a more balanced opinion than just my nostalgia-glazed hindsight.
Yeah, but thinking back, I don't think you could skip the summons in 7, 8, or 9.
I remember the first time, like, the first summon you can get in 7 is the Chocomog one, which
right.
not a lot of people know about, because you walk up to one of the Chocobos at the Chocobo Ranch, and you have 3 different options, Wark, Wark, and Wark, but Wark is spelled in, with... different numbers of K's at the end. So you have K, KK, and then racist Wark, because KKK. But I think you have to choose the racist one with the 3 K's, and then he gives you the Chocomog material. Why? I don't know.
It's because it's a Final Fantasy game.
You don't really question these things. So that was the first one you get. Then I think after that you get, like, Shiba? I think Shiva's
the
next
Shiva's
one.
The
Shiver or Ifrit or Ifrit, however.
Yeah.
Or Shiva, however you want to pronounce it. Pronunciations.
We don't do them.
No. But, no, but, like, that game, like, 7 was just so much fun because when you get a new summon, like, the first time I played it, I remember getting a new summon, like, what does this one look like? What's the animation? Like, what does Shiva look like? What is Ifrit or Ifrit going to look like? What is Leviathan? Leviathan is not worth getting.
No.
Because that you have to do Yuffie's side quest.
Oh, gosh.
That Yuffie's is the quest. Most... Like, now that I've played it a couple times, it doesn't bother me because I know what to do. I mean, to an extent, anyway. But freaking... This pop filter's driving me nuts. I gotta put it back on. Sorry for the sounds. I apologize. All the... Okay.
There we go.
Do-do-do. I'll see how much I can edit out of that for you people. So, anyway, Yuffie, first of all, is a pain to get.
Yes.
You can get her outside of Fort Condor, the woods near Fort Condor / Junon.
Right.
and you have to fight her and beat her, and then you have to answer the series of correct questions, because if you don't, she steals something from you.
Steals your materia, doesn't she?
Not when you get her.
Okay.
But when you go back to her hometown of Wutai, or Wutai, yeah.
Wutai Clan.
Wutai Clan. Then, yes, she steals everything, because her country's at war still, I think, with Midgar, with Shinra or whatever. Because Shinra and Wutai had a big fight. That's what it was. Because yes. That's what a lot of the stuff leading up to the events of Final Fantasy VII happened. But anyway, so she steals all your materia in the hopes of using it for the war, and she wants to give it to her country. But she doesn't tell you that.
Nope.
She just steals it and then runs away. And you have to spend the next 30 minutes running around her town trying to find her. And it is the and when you fight things without your materia, you don't realize how much you actually need it. Like, you don't have cure, you don't have your HP and MP ups if you were smart enough to buy them.
Well, and the thing too, that I'm pretty sure that's the point in the game where you actually get used to using your materia, you have it all figured out, you're relying on it the most at that point, and then, bam. Taken away. Just like any other Final Fantasy game.
Another thing, like, I know we're kind of jumping all over the place, so let's kind of, like, we're not done talking about 7, but let's kind of bring it back to it. Let's start back with our focal point. We were talking about the story.
Yes.
So, with the story, I think what was so memorable for it, for me, was just how grand it was. Like, every game I had played up until then, Zelda had a great story. The Ocarina of Time, I remember that blew me away for how crazy that story was. And it had a really, like, I didn't play any of the older Zeldas at that point. I had no idea anything about Zelda. I just saw the cover of it, and I'm like, well, that looks boring. There's nothing on it.
What's this?
Because I only see... Yeah, I just saw the... And I was so confused. I'm like, why did Zelda get Game of the Year? I don't understand. And then I played it, and I was hooked on it. And right. No other game since then... No story in a game since then had engrossed me up until Final 7. Because I didn't even play Final 7 up until, like, the early 2000s, because that's when I was, like, that's when I was in junior high. That's when I started playing all them.
Yeah.
I missed, like, the first 3 or 4 years of it.
Well, and along with the story, too, they gave all the characters so much personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we talk about having
with the exception of Kate Sith.
Yeah.
Forget her. Screw that character. Gosh, sorry.
I've never used that character.
Useless.
Yes. So useless. But yeah, like, you know, we were talking earlier with older games in general, like, you had to use your imaginations. You kind of had to force personality onto these characters because, you know, the animations were limited, all that good stuff. But just that first intro scene, you're in Midgar, you know, first doing a job with Avalanche.
Well, are you thinking of the intro level or the intro cinematic where you just see the big, like, high shot of the camera going down into Midgar and you just see Aeris with her flower basket?
Yeah, both, because that just sets the whole city up. It's like, this is legit. Like, this game is legit. And then you first join Avalanche, you see Barrett. You know, and he's just, like, you can just sense his personality right away. Like, all his actions he does, like, you know, he takes care of his fellow members, but, you know, he does not trust outsiders type of thing. You know, like, they just fill everyone with so much personality, and it just sucks you right into the story.
That was the first time I ever saw swearing in a video game.
Yep.
Granted, it was all bleeped out.
Yep.
But you knew what he was talking about. Yeah. You knew what he was saying. And... I totally agree with you. Like, the characters of that game were just so absorbing. Mm-hmm. Even the villain, like, Sephiroth is one of the most iconic villains of all time. Not just in Final Fantasy, of the entire gaming world.
Right,
because... you can't think of gaming villains without mentioning him as a villain. Like, he is such a strong villain.
Yeah, exactly, because they gave him a purpose. It wasn't just like, oh, this is a bad guy. He wants to destroy the world.
Well, like, so far, like I said, I'm playing Final Fantasy on 2/4, depending on how you're counting, but 2 on the Super Nintendo. And so far, I know Golbez, or Golbez, however you pronounce his name, I was only reading it, in, like, quickly. He's the villain, but he doesn't seem... He just wants to destroy the world. He wants to take over it. He doesn't have a reason for it. He's just a tool.
Exactly.
Like, he's a one-dimensional villain. All the characters so far are really fun, just the villain. I mean, maybe there's more backstory yet. Don't spoil anything for me, Justin, or anyone else listening. No, I'm not going to read the comments if that's the case. But so far, he's just a tool. He doesn't have a reason for what he's doing, at least as far as I know. He might... I mean, the way they're setting him up so far, it seems like he's just going to be a one-dimensional villain. And that's fine. Like, I've played plenty of games with one-dimensional villains. That doesn't bother me. But, like, when you compare it to villains like Sephiroth, you get such... Like, he is... Like, you understand his anguish, too, because throughout the first disc, they have flashbacks constantly of him realizing that he was never really born naturally. He is the product of an experiment.
Exactly, yep. And it's just, you, like, once you discover more and more about his backstory, and really, like, Cloud's backstory, too, like, it's almost like, not that, like, it takes anything away from Sephiroth being a villain, but you're like, holy crap, like, you know, this guy has a purpose, like, there's a reason why he's doing this. It makes him that much more villainous.
Yeah, because he has conviction. It's exactly. Not just, I'm a tool. It's like, no, I'm angry, and I'm psychotic because of what's happened to me. And on that note, even, like, I wanted to mention specifically, these three games do a really good job of demonstrating internal conflict without voice acting.
Yes.
Without showing... 8, not so much, but I'll, like, once we get to that part, we'll go into it.
Yes.
With Final 7... There's a whole section of the game devoted to just sorting out Cloud's memories and what he has created for himself as an illusion or a delusion of, basically a delusion of grandeur. He was more into what he thought of himself without, he fabricated everything until that big thing the late part of the game, like in disc 2 is when it happens, I'm pretty sure, which is over 2/3 of the game through all the way through. I can't speak. And like, there's so many times, like, even the animation they choose where, like, his head almost looks like he's headbanging, but at an impossibly fast rate. But you can see, like, he's fighting with himself through that. Even with the crude graphics for the, because they improved greatly from seven, eight to nine. Like, the pre-rendered backgrounds are still just as fine in any of them, but, like, the character models are just straight up. Even the cinematics, like, 7 and 8 and 9 have such good cinematics compared to 7. You can see the difference. And so, but even with those crude graphics, like, Cloud just gets, like, the way they show his almost, like, how he's kind of losing himself in his own mind is so well done. Like, I felt it even back when I first played it. And even now when I replay it, I understand his plight. And spoilers, once again, when he finds out he's a clone of Sephiroth, that's when he just loses his shit. He just can't... He doesn't understand it anymore.
Exactly. And that was one of the most memorable scenes for me. Like, going through that whole scenario, I was just like, No, wait, this is, and then my head exploded,
And it sucks when you replay it, because you already know what happens,
yeah.
But that is such a dialogue-heavy thing. It's necessary, completely necessary, but when you've already played it, and you're just like, I know, because it's, you don't really run around, you don't fight anything, you just run up to the next person to talk to in Cloud's dream sequence in this too. So, the last thing I wanted to cover, and it's completely separate from the story, is that I wanted to talk about airships.
Yes!
Freaking, this was the first game I ever played that had a world map and had an airship, and that was the coolest idea to me. The fact that you could even just freaking explore the airship itself, like, you could go into the airship and, like, walk around and talk to people. I mean, the Highwind, the airship for this game, had a chocobo breeding stable. Freaking awesome! Like, that just... Oh, mind exploded.
My goodness. Not to jump to Final Fantasy IX, but since that was the first game of these three I've played, seeing that whole scene in Limblum with the airship, my mind was just taken for a loop. I was like, this is the coolest concept ever.
It's so good. And I love the idea of an airship. I don't know why, because we have airships technically now. They're called airplanes.
But they're not boats in the air.
Exactly. We want boats in the air. You know what? NASA, Air Force, Boeing, U.S. Airways, get on this. Yes. We want a flying boat. Not a flying plane. We want a boat that can fly.
Exactly, with propellers and windmills and sails.
Do it!
Make it happen.
So, it was the most, it captivated my imagination. That's the best way I can describe it.
Absolutely, because you think about it, like, the idea isn't that, like, profound or anything.
No, but it's magical.
Exactly. It's like, I never would have thought of this. Like, this is the coolest concept ever.
Now, did you play Final Fantasy... Wasn't there an airship in Final Fantasy 3/6 as well? Did you play that before Final Fantasy 9 or no?
No, Final Fantasy 9 was...
Your first one?
My first one. Yeah, I played 9 first, and then I had Final Fantasy 6 on the PlayStation, which was almost unplayable because
of the load times.
Exactly. Every time you went into a battle, it would have to load. And this just had Final Fantasy 6 and Chrono Trigger. It was Final Fantasy 4
and yes. Chrono Trigger. Okay. Which was the one I'm playing right now, yes. Which is Final Fantasy 2 on the Super Nintendo.
Yes, okay, I'm getting all mixed. So I had, I played 4 on PS1 and 6, but I couldn't, like, I could barely get through any of it because of the load times.
I remember trying to play Chrono Trigger on that copy you had, and it is just impossible. I finally, like, I borrowed Chrono Trigger from you for the Super Nintendo so I could actually play it well. And I did have the version of it for the DS, but I wanted to play it on the original just to know what it was like.
DS is awesome to have it on because it's a portable Chrono Trigger, but to have it, like, it's Super Nintendo on a CRT television, like...
Oh, it's great.
Ah, magical.
But... do you have anything else to... Before we move on to 8, do you have anything else to add on 7?
I would say just kind of like a more general thing of these games is kind of the side quests. Just specifically the character side quests. Mm-hmm. Like, just to stay on Final Fantasy 7 just a bit, getting Vincent. That whole area to me, it was so cool to me, like, trying to figure out... You had to figure out the safe combination,
yes,
right?
And if you got it, you got a summon out of it, too.
That's right, yep.
Was it Rama, the lightning dude, I think?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Oh, man. But I remember the first time I played through Final Fantasy VII, I didn't get Vincent. And when I discovered he was in the game, I went back, played through the whole game again, just so I could get Vincent... and explore this whole other character, and I do not regret it one single bit, because it was so worth it.
I agree. Vincent is an awesome character.
Absolutely. But these games, like, there's always just a little bit something you might miss going through it.
There's always something hidden.
Yeah. Or it's something, it could be extremely cryptic, it could be right in front of your face, but you might miss it. Like, the first time I played through, I ended up getting Cloud's ultimate summon... Or
weapon?
Yeah, ultimate weapon and the limit break.
The Omni Slash?
Yeah, the Omni Slash from the casino.
The Golden Saucer. Yeah. You have to get enough points. It's like 10,000 battle points in the battle arena, but you are not allowed to leave the battle arena because they'll reset or they'll go away. So you have to basically walk in with enough health potions and items to heal yourself because Cloud goes in by himself. And keep doing the battle arena until you have enough points for Omni Slash.
Exactly. And I forget who was playing it at the time, but when they got to Sephiroth in the final fight, and you get that limit break from the fight, like, whoever I was playing at the time was like, this is awesome! I'm like, oh, I actually got that limit break, like, ages ago before I even got to this point because I got it from the Golden Saucer.
Yeah.
But it's just those little things, like, the developers even of Final Fantasy VII.
I mean, I know we were about to move on to it, but the limit breaks.
Yes.
Like, they were so cool, and the fact that you had to use each limit break in a certain way or a certain number of times to upgrade to the next level of limit break.
That's right.
And then, like, I remember it was always a rush for me to see how fast I could get up to level 4, which is Omni Slash. Because mm-hmm. you had three levels. You had, I can't remember all the names. I know there's three levels, but I can't remember. Because there was two limit breaks on each level,
mm-hmm.
except for 4, which had the one, which was the ultimate. And each character was like that. I know Tifa's usually involved, like, a slot machine with yep. hers. Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember. Red's was just a normal move. Barret's was a normal move. There wasn't anything special to theirs. Yeah. It was just like you had to choose what you wanted to do. Each one was for a different situation. So yeah, I mean, Vincent's was interesting because he turned into the monsters.
That's right.
That was cool. And he would fight as them. They would last for the rest of the fight, I'm pretty sure. When he was in his monster form, yep. I believe. I don't remember. You can correct us on that if we're wrong on that. I'm pretty sure if it's the whole fight, but in any case. But yeah, so the limit breaks are one of my favorite parts in all of them, not just Final 7, absolutely. But like all the games were really fun with the limit breaks.
Yeah, because it just, you try to, at least for me, like I always tried to save my limit breaks for the bosses, but just to like build them up and be like, all right, now I can use this awesome move and just kick the boss's ass like right away. And just finding out, okay, what's the next limit break gonna be? Okay, this is cool. All right, keep going. Like, it's such a nice little touch.
Mm-hmm. To the it broke mechanics. Up the monotony of the combat just enough.
Exactly.
So, anyway, guys, we are going to move on to Final Fantasy VIII now. Alright, and now for Final Fantasy VIII. I will be talking mostly on this one, mainly since Justin hasn't beaten the game yet.
Yep.
But
I'll contribute where I can.
So, this is one of my favorite games. However, I think the reason I liked it so much is because now that I remember, I had a strategy guide the entire time. So, all the bullcrap that you had to deal with, I didn't have that issue because I had the strategy guide to help me out with it. All the carding, and it didn't ruin the game for me. Some people hate that. Like I beat 9 without a strategy guide. I beat 7 without a strategy guide. I beat 10 with the exception of one temple without the strategy guide, because there's like one temple in Final 10 on the PS2 that if you don't do it right, you'll never get Bahamut, the summon Bahamut, and you can't go back and do it again.
Yep.
It's the only one temple in the whole game, so I'm like, I'm doing this right, I don't care if I want a strategy guide. So I did that. For the rest of it, though, I did, like, for the rest of that game, I didn't use a strategy guide, and I haven't really played much since 10, in all honesty. Like, I've tried 12 and 13, but 13 I got through, like, the gigantic, like, 30-hour tutorial.
Yep.
And then it got into the open world, I'm like, I'm bored now. Right when it's supposed to get good.
Yep. But, and you can kind of stream right through the open world part, but I could see why.
You know, maybe I'll go back to it, and you can explain what I've forgotten with the story and help me out with it, maybe. So,
sure.
We'll see. Try. In any case, back to Final Fantasy VIII. So, first thing I want to say, it is probably my favorite one on the PlayStation ones, but I think only because of the nostalgia. If I look back at it objectively, it's definitely the weakest by far. Like, even if you, like, if I think the biggest thing, and people have harped on it, so I'm not going to harp on it that much, is the draw system.
Yep.
While it is a really cool idea where you can draw magic, and with the summons that you gather, you can, depending on what summons you have equipped to each person, determines what attributes you can junction the magic you've gathered to it to increase that stat, and certain magic is better for each stat, which you can just, it's trial and error. It doesn't hurt anything to see what it increases. It's just literally like, all right, I have a bunch of this spell. How much does it do?
Yep.
Like, for example, early game, water is like the best thing for your strength. I don't know why, but it just destroys everything.
H2O,
like,
son.
But to get 100 waters if you want to max out your strength early on. You have to draw... You can go down to the beach and draw something from these fish. Yeah. And you can do that, but there's also, if like, what is it? I remember you get... After, like, the first section of Final Fantasy VIII, after you leave Balam Garden the first time, like, when you're going to, on your first mission as a official seed, a mercenary, you get Diablo from Cid, the headmaster.
Yep.
And Diablo has a, I think he has, like, the theft ability or the mug or something like that, but it costs 200 AP to do it. And that's
right. Yes.
And the easiest way to do that, sadly, is to fight those fish, because they give you 3 AP each, and there's 2 of them, so you get 6 a fight, which is the highest you'll get for a very long time.
Yeah, yep.
And so if you can, if you have the patience for it, like, don't get me wrong, you don't need to do that. It won't ruin the game. It won't make the game a billion times easier by having it. It just makes it a little bit more streamlined, if that.
Yeah.
But in any case, the draw system was the biggest problem, because you could spend hours just drawing yourselves. And they did try to break it up with the draw points, but the draw points that within the world that would just give you a spell, they didn't refresh enough. Like, the timer for them to come back up just took way too long.
Exactly. And it was like, it was a really cool concept, but it was just a classic case of awesome concept, poor execution of it.
Exactly. They didn't implement it the way they should have. And while, like I said, while I do love it, there's a ton of flaws. One of them is, I will say, the story, even though it's a love story and I really enjoyed it, it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, like, it escalates so random. Like, the first half of it is, like, really, really good. Like, I understand everything that's happening, and then I think, and I agree with my friend Jamie's one, kind of pointed this out to me, you go into space for some reason. Like, they'd say they have to shoot Rinoa into space because she's the target of the bad guy. Or, no, she, like, has part of the bad guy in her. I haven't played it in years because while I love it, it's the only one I have not replayed because the draw system just kills me. So, in any case, they shoot Rinoa into space, if I remember correctly, because it's meant to protect everyone. They don't really explain why it's going to protect anyone. I think it clicked with me at the time. I'm like, oh, if she's in space, she can't do anything to people on Earth. But it's like, you could do something so much less expensive.
Like, shoot him into space.
So, that was another big complaint that I guess I could have with it. And another thing, one thing I will say on its behalf, though, a lot of people rag on Squall for being really emo.
Mm-hmm.
I will defend him because he isn't, one, he is not that bad. Two, if you had to put up with all the shit that the characters of this game put him through, you would be emo too. Zell is the most annoying character in the world. Rinoa is like, she's whiny all the time. Selvie's a freaking ditz.
Mm-hmm.
And Irvine, don't get me. Okay, Irvine is the most freaking useless character in the whole goddamn game. So, you get him at Galbadia Garden, this other garden, your sister garden, essentially, all across the world. And you get him because you want to take out the main villain, Edea, the sorceress, the evil, horrible person of the game, and you want him to snipe her. He's a sniper that in any normal battle, when you have him, uses a shotgun. He's a sniper. let's let that sink in. He's a sniper that likes to fight with a shotgun.
Why not?
Polar opposites. And when the mission, his whole purpose for you is to freaking, so you can get him to go to, I forget the city, I think it's Galbadia, but I apologize if that's completely wrong, but you want him to assassinate the sorceress, right? So you create this whole diversion in the middle of this parade, and he sets himself up in a clock tower, and he doesn't take the shot for 5 minutes because you have to spend coercing him because he decides, I don't want to do it. He's supposed to be their expert sniper. He's supposed to be the best of the best. And all of a sudden, he's like, I don't want to do it. I don't feel like it. And so you have to spend 5 minutes convincing this stupid bastard to shoot her, and then by the time he does, she just deflects it anyway, and then everything goes loose. Everything goes crazy. That is my beef with Irvine. I didn't even realize how stupid of a character he was until my friend Pete pointed it out to me. It never even dawned on me. He's a sniper that uses a shotgun. I don't know how many times I need to say this, but it's gotta be said. What stupid character is that? So, oh my lord. Okay.
You can't snipe with a shotgun?
Oh my god. anyway, Squall has to deal with that. Back to that. Squall has to deal with all these horrible characters. Whiny love interest, a ditzy healer slash nunchuck girl, the most annoying possible person who's a spaz. They call him a spaz most of the time in the game, named Zell. You have Irvine, who's just, like, he's a womanizer, first of all, and he's a wimpy sniper who fights with a shotgun. I'm trying to remember the other characters in this now, because I don't remember. Renoa fights with her dog most of the time. Mm-hmm. She shoots him off of her crossbow. Go figure that one out. But, no, so, as you can see, while I honest to God love this game, but I am not afraid to look at it objectively. Like, there is some messed up crap in here that just, why does it exist? Yeah. Like, why did they do this? There's some things that just don't make any sense.
But if you take those parts out, it's actually a really enjoyable game.
Like, it is.
Even though I've only gotten past the first disc, from what I played of it, like, I really did enjoy it. I'm trying to think, the last battle I fought was, I think you're on a train, and you fight the snakes.
Are you thinking of, like, the train to get to Timber, your first mission? How far are you into the game? Because there's a lot of train riding.
Okay. So, I'm pretty sure...
Snakes on a train?
Snakes on a train. It was at the end of the first disc. Maybe even the
you're close to... Okay. The end of the first disc is the assassination attempt on the sorceress.
I missed the shotgun sniper dude.
So, here's the way it works. So, the storyline, from what I remember, you get sent on a mission because... Renoa, Squall's love interest, is best friends with Cypher, who is a tool. He's Squall's rival in the school. Just again, spoilers, and I won't spoil for you. I won't go any further, since I already did kind of spoil that he doesn't kill the sorceress, but I guess if he killed her at the end of disc one, the game would have been over. Yep. So, so Renoa comes to this dance because Cypher invited her, and she wants to talk with Cid to talk about hiring the headmaster, to talk about hiring some seed mercenaries from their school, Balam Garden, to go to help out her rebel cause against the Galbadian soldiers who have invaded their town. So you go, it's Squall, Zell, and I believe Selphie. They get tasked with going to Timber with her, or with them. And I believe, was Cypher with you? I can't remember. Cypher is an interesting character in this. But he's a tool, but he's an interesting character in this. Because he ends up... I can't say anymore without giving away the plot. That, and I don't 100% remember, but I know for a fact there's some... Like, I can say a couple things that would ruin part of the plot. So I'm not going to do that for Justin's sake here. But, so, they go to the Timberwolves, and then from the Timberwolves... They fight a couple things, and then... it's been so long. But you end up finding out, like, kind of what the sorcerer's up to somehow. And so then you go to Galbadia Garden. Even though it's part of Galbadia, the evil empire, you're trying to kill the sorceress who's from. Or, like, who's helping, who's, like, part of. You have to, That's how you do it. So you're in Timber. Sorry. I'm sorry I'm jumping around, folks. It's all coming back to me. So you're in Timber, and you want to interrupt a broadcast signal to, like, announce, like, Timber's taking back. Like, you rebels are trying to take back this broadcast signal. So you do that. And, in the process of doing so, like, the president of Galbadia was going to be at Timber, because that's where the big broadcasting station is. So he was going to make a big announcement while you try to sabotage it and hijack his thing, basically just charge in and just make a whole speech to the public instead of the president. Mm-hmm. When you try to do that, the sorceress is there. Cypher goes with the sorceress you're not 100%. It's almost like she kind of like hypnotizes him. You don't really find out why till I believe later, if at all. It's been a while. And so that's where you kind of find out, like, this sorceress is like the evil one. Like, you really, like, this is who the villain of the game is. And that's when you get in contact with your headmaster to go to Galbadia Garden, who is willing to go against their own, like, territory or country because they understand the greater good. And that's where you get Irvine, the horrible sniper. And then you go over to Galbadia. I can't remember the main city of Galbadia. I think it's just Galbadia, but we're just going to call it for that because I'm blanking on it. So I apologize. Correct me. Let me know. I can't remember right now. And that's where Disc 1 ends, I believe.
Okay.
That's a really rushed and vague kind of memory of it. I got to replay it. But
yeah, like, the intro I remember really well. Like, I remember trolling for hours on the beach and, like, going back to the garden and, like, the whole school and all that stuff. But, I mean, I think starting with Final Fantasy VII for Square Enix, like, they took such a big risk with VII, jumping from...
Well, it was Squaresoft at the time.
Yeah, thank you. Jumping from, you know, a cartridge... base games on the Nintendo platform, switching platforms to Sony's PlayStation, which, you know, they didn't know at the time if it was going to be
successful
or not. A different medium going to CD, which allowed them to create these masterpieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they saw the success of 7, they wanted to take another big risk with 8. And, you know, 8's not that well known for being a great Final Fantasy game, but
tried stuff.
Exactly. You have to give them props for taking another big risk after the success of 7. Like, they could have really just keep rehashing the gameplay of 7. Yeah, like,
and it's kind of funny because that's kind of what brought them back to 9, because they're like, 8 was such a big, like, a critical failure. I don't know how commercial it was. I don't know how much of a commercial failure or success it was, mm-hmm. but it was definitely a critical failure. Oh, not yeah. a lot of critics liked it. And so when they went back to 9, like, all right, let's bring it back to its roots, which is why you have you rename the princess in Final 9 at some point, and she wanted to be named Knife or whatever. Dagger. She wanted to be named Dagger. I'm like, that's a stupid name. I'm going to call you Rinoa because I love Final Fantasy VIII, so I still call her Rinoa even to this day. Her real name is Garnett.
Yep.
But, yeah, so anyway, she is like the white mage. Vivi is obviously the black mage. Zidane is the thief. Mm-hmm. So you have all these classic roles, and then Steiner's the warrior / tank, if you want to think of that. So, so, where was I going with this? Where did we...
So 8 was more of the critical failure, but it kind of...
And it brought them back to 9, which they wanted to go back to their roots.
Exactly.
So, before we go, the last thing I want to mention is, once again, airships. I loved the airship in this. It was called the Ragnarok, and it was actually a spaceship. You don't ever fly around in space. Because, now that I think about it, that's another stupid plot point. You find Ragnarok when... After Rinoa gets shot up into space, Squall goes after her, and they have this big touching moment out in space, and they're drifting just in their spacesuits for, like, I don't know how long. I think it was meant to be, like, they didn't know if they could get out of it alive type of deal. There's just Ragnarok chilling in the atmosphere. They get in, start it up, go back to Earth. Why? I don't know. There might be a reason. I just, like I said, it's been a while. And I remember that now. Why was it up there? Do they ever explain it? I can't. Let me know if you remember. So, do you have anything before we move on to 9? Oh, sorry. With the airships, Ragnarok was cool, and the other thing was Balam Garden, your original garden. Yes. Spoiler alert, sort of, but it won't ruin this plot. Can fly.
You've ruined it all for it. No, that's pretty awesome.
It's really freaking cool. Midway through, I think, this too, something bad happens at the garden, and it ends up, like, it literally comes out of the ground, like, just, like, flies out of the ground, and you can fly it around the world like an airship.
That's awesome.
It's so cool. So anyway, before we move on to 9, Justin, is there anything you'd like to add to our discussion of Final 8?
Final 8, I think I pretty much said everything that I could.
Okay. So guys, next one is Final Fantasy IX. And then we're going to have you start out with 9, since that is your baby. All right. Swaddle the rapid and swaddle the clothes and lie in a major. To Jesus. All right, so ready?
Yep. Fantasy IX. This was the first Final Fantasy I've played, as I mentioned before. And this game, everything I've said about Final Fantasy VII, from the personalities of all the characters to the epic cinematics to the story, like, this game just sucked me right in from the beginning. Like, the whole intro scene, or not the scene, but the whole intro part of that game, just that if you haven't played it, you start out like you're this thief, Zidane, and you're kind of like a traveling
theater group. But who are also thieves.
Exactly.
Called Tantalus.
Yes.
I remember that.
Gold sticker, cool.
Woo! Slap it on my chest.
But the whole, like, you're doing this play, and it's entertaining, but you get to a point where Zidane runs to the front of the crowd, and you have to, like, show off for them in this epic, like, fight.
That was really fun. I remember that.
And, like, it was just a simple, like...
It was QuickTime events.
Yeah, like, Simon says, like, okay, press the X button, press the square button, okay. And, like, it would go along, like, the choreography of it. So you would either, like, slash or, like, jump back or dodge, you know. And depending on how well you did, they just throw coins at you, and then you end up... trying to steal the princess. You just end up into the forest. The ship gets set on fire, crash land in the forest, and you technically start your adventure there.
Yeah.
And you're going through the forest, and as soon as you're leaving the forest, you've defeated the boss.
Because the boss kidnaps Rinoa. Or, sorry, Garnet.
Yeah, so the boss kidnaps name change. Garnet.
I want to call myself Dagger. That's going to be a good name.
Oh, gosh, I could not call her Dagger. But, yeah, so steals Princess Garnet. You fight him, rescue her. But when you defeat the boss, the whole forest starts to turn into stone. And so they have this awesome cinematic.
One of the best cinematics.
It was so cool. Like, you just see them running away from the forest as it turns into stone behind them, like, slowly. And I forget what is Zidane's one friend has, but at the very last moment, like, you see him getting left behind, like, he can't keep up. So he just throws this item to Zidane, and as he does it, he gets caught in the forest, and it turns him into stone.
No, I think he was already caught, and he chucks it to get to Zidane.
That's right.
I don't remember what he threw. It was like a scroll or something, but I don't remember the importance of it.
Yeah, it's been too long.
What was the significance?
But just that whole...
You know, keep talking. I actually have the strategy guide. I never used it, like I said, but I actually end up with a strategy guide for 9. I'm going to see if it says it. All right. Be right back.
But, so just watching that whole cinematic, and you just see him, like, slowly turn into stone, and you see Zidane's horror and angst, like, one of his good friends just turns into stone right before his eyes. Like, it is one of the best intro dungeons, whatever you want to call it, cinematics. Like, it just takes you right into that game and throws you right into it. It's just an amazing sequence of events.
Okay, I'm back. I forget, is Vivi with you at this point? I believe he is. I can't remember, though.
That's an excellent question. I don't think so.
Okay, he throws the continental map to you. Woo! I'm thinking it's something of highly... like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, you need a map, but, like, that's a really epic scene for something you could have walked to the next town and bought or gotten from someone.
Yeah. Okay, that's not as epic as I see it, but it was really epic to see it.
Oh, it allows us to mark important locations on the world map, which I never did.
Woo! But, I think Vivi get later. But, because I think when you first run into Steiner and the whole ordeal with, like, returning Garnet.
Oh, Steiner's with you, too. I forgot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is with you in the beginning. That's right. Yeah, I can't remember when you get Vivi.
By the way, just sorry to interrupt. Thinking, since I did look at the strategy guide just to find out what that item was, right? I remember when I beat 9 originally, and then I wanted to go back and replay with the strategy guide so I could see all the things I missed that I didn't catch the first time, right? This strategy guide is bullshit, because everything you need in it, you have to go to playonline.com to see. So, like, they'll be like, alright, so it'll tell you what to do, and then, for example... there are some really good items to retrieve in this area. To find out where, check out playonline.com. So, they don't tell you where, like, all this treasure chests are. You have to go, and they tell you, type in this keyword. Playonline.com is no longer functioning.
Oh, that's horrible.
At least not that I remember. And I just... You know what? I'm going to check it later on. Maybe I'm wrong, but as far as I remember, so it'd have stuff like that. Like,
well, that's why with strategy guys like that, there's no wonder they're not around anymore.
Well, like, the Final 8 strategy guy had everything you could possibly want, ever.
Do I still have that? But I could see that style of strategy guides now, because with patches and things, like, things could change, they could move stuff around.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to have some stuff online, but come on, that's ridiculous. Like,
here, there's a bunch of treasure chests in here that we're going to tell you are there. We're not going to tell you where.
You just know.
You got to go online. And to remind you, this was in 1999. How many people really had internet that was going to be, like, worth... that they would actually wait the time to sign on to AOL, go through the stupid dial-up tone...
Yep.
To get to playonline.com and type in a keyword just to find out items that if they...
they could probably find themselves if they just spent that time looking for it.
Yeah, so it's just useless. That the purpose of a strategy guide is for you... they did it just to save paper. It is such a thin strategy guide compared to, like, 8 and even 7 from what I saw of 7. I don't own 7 strategy guide, but from what I saw of it... I need to find my 8 strategy guide again. Sorry. So go on, Justin.
Continue. Yeah, so just from that cinematic and going forward, the characters and their backstories, they did such a good job of really explaining where these characters are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say everyone's least favorite character in that game is Steiner.
No, I actually like him.
Really?
I didn't like Erica, the summoner.
Oh,
she was annoying as... I did not like her. She was just whiny, and none of the characters... like, Steiner, like, he was just a stick in the mud.
Mm.
And the times that he was annoying, and, like... I think the only reason you even consider him... like, some people consider him annoying, at least my buddy Tristan did. He liked that game a lot, but the reason he didn't like Steiner so much... because Steiner looks stupid. Like, when he's angry, he looks stupid. When he's confused, he looks stupid. When he's happy, he still looks stupid. It's his face. They gave him these bizarre eyelashes, if I remember correctly. Like, they were, like, almost, like, character. Like, they put makeup on him, but no one else wears makeup except him.
And looking back, like, since I'm a lot older now than when I was first playing it, but you look at Steiner and you look at the Queen... and pretty much any of the characters from that city, they kind of... it's almost like satire.
Well, because the Queen, I will never forget the first time I saw the Queen. She is ugly as sin.
Yep. Like, super gluttonous. Like,
she has 40 chins and 30 necks.
Yep, it's...
which doesn't make any sense. But that's how disproportionate she is.
And looking back on it, it is, I don't know if you could call it political satire, but it is just.
Well, satire would have to be like, there would have to be a direct corollary to like some kind of government, like the government they are satirizing. So that could be like a satirization. Is that a word? Could be a satire of just monarchy in general.
Yeah, like the medieval times.
Because the next city they go to, the actual city, not town, because after they escape the forest, then they go to the village of Delhi, which is where the black mages are being made.
Yes, we have to touch on that.
The one character in this game is called Vivi. He is an adorable little black mage, and he, unlike the other black mages you see in the game, Vivi has a soul. He has a character. He is a character, and going back to internal conflict, how these games presented very well. Final 7 presented very well. Like I said, Cloud's internal conflict. Even Sephiroth, we touched out on that. Finally, didn't do it well at all. I'm not going to lie. Like I said before, Love Date, it didn't do internal conflict well at all. All the characters, with the exception of Squall, were not likable. And Squall was only likable to some people, because some people can't stand his emo crap. So,
you mean a shotgun sniper doesn't have internal conflict?
Which woman he wants to sleep with, that's pretty much it, since he is a womanizer. But with this game, not only does Zidane have internal conflict, because he's the main character, he has the whole thrust of the story put upon him. Vivi, the little black mage, has one of the best characters and backstories in any game I've played.
They did such an amazing job on it, because the relationship Zidane and Vivi have is, in some ways, downright adorable.
Yeah.
Like, Vivi is a shy black mage. Zidane's always trying to be optimistic, lift him up, like, you know, like, he's extremely useful, and he's trying to show him that.
And Vivi doesn't think of himself as useful at all, from what I remember.
And the point where you get to the Vivi's town, where all of these black mages live, and
are being made by the Mist. The Mist was a big thing.
The Mist, and that when you're actually talking to them, I could be thinking of this wrong, but if I remember correctly, they don't understand the concept of death.
The black mages don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just so profound. Like, they have no idea how they're being created. Like, they're almost completely oblivious to everything.
And Vivi goes through a huge struggle of, like, am I nothing more than these mindless creatures?
Exactly, because he actually notices all this. And going through that struggle, like,
or not even that, am I more? He knows he's more, but he's like, was I meant to be?
Right. And, yeah, it just, the emotion you feel from Vivi in that moment is just so heavy. Like, they did such an amazing job with that. And even, like, the other characters, like Garnet, like, you can tell she has the weight of the kingdom on her from her mom's doings. Like, it completely, you know, turns, like, doesn't give a crap about the kingdom. Like, kingdom citizens or anything like that, just about herself and, like, the other higher-ups.
World conquest.
Yeah, exactly. Which
I always thought was funny in this game, because she really only wanted to conquer just the continent. And there was only 3 countries in the continent. And the rest of the world was, like, there was nothing in the world.
Yeah, it was essentially undiscovered land.
Which was cool, but at the same time, it was kind of sad. Like, it was kind of a letdown. I like having a vast world. But in any case, I will talk about the world later, because that's one of my favorite parts. Final Fantasy IX's world was my favorite, like, world to live in.
Yeah.
Or not to live in, but to play in. What were you going to finish up with, or, like, continue on with?
Yeah, so, and just all the other characters, too. Like, Steiner, you can tell he's, like, he has a conflict with how he acts and how, like,
his duty.
Yeah, like, how much he protects Garnet. Like, he knows it's his duty, but he could tell, like, can't duty. he could tell, like, it gets on her nerves, but,
you know. Well, not even that. Like, from what I remember, and it's been a while, that, he gets into conflict with himself in the fact that he understands that he's tasked with protecting the princess. Excuse me. But at the same time, while he's on that task, he discovers how evil the queen is.
Yep.
And so he kind of makes it his only task to protect the princess, and he doesn't care about the kingdom anymore or what the queen's wish. He cares about the kingdom. He doesn't care about the queen's wishes.
Yep. And it, like I mentioned before, like I didn't mind Steiner as much as a character either. But I've just known, like, people that I've talked to that playing on, they're like, oh, Steiner. But to me, he had the coolest, like, turnaround in personality. Because he starts off essentially a hard ass with, like, protecting the princess. That's his only duty. He doesn't give Zidane the light of day type of thing.
Yeah.
And just to see him kind of change throughout the whole story, like, to me, he changes the most out of anyone.
Oh, yeah. He has a big 180 throughout the story. But let's not dwell on the story too much. We could talk about... I mean, I don't remember it well enough. You remember it better than I do, but we could talk about the story for hours, like we did with Seven.
Yeah, so but, let's continue.
What I wanted to touch on also was, before we go into the world, was the summons. Like, once again, the summons were really cool in this game, and I've totally forgot to mention it in 8 now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. I will just skim over it. We already covered 8. I won't go into it in full detail, but 8 and 9 had the longest cutscenes for summons ever. Yes. 8 8 had more longer ones. 9 I think had the longest one out of all the three of them. But the rest of them weren't that long, just like one of them. Final 8 had consistently big ones, and they kind of balanced it in that there was an attribute or a skill you could teach your guardian force or the summon the GF called boost, and basically in mid cutscene you would have an option come up and you hit X multiple times and that'll boost the damage of the attack.
That's right.
Yeah. But if it only shows up random times, so maybe it'll show up for 2 seconds, disappear for a second, show up for 4 seconds, disappear for a second, show up, or however long it is. It's more consistent than that. But if you hit it when it's not up, then the counter of your boost will reset to 0.
Ah.
So the longer the summon animation, the more time you had to boost it up. Right. So The longest one in Final 8 is called Eden, I think. And it's like a solid minute long. It's outrageous. I think it's like a minute. I didn't clock it, but it's big. And you can boost the crap out of it.
Alright, so we need to launch that summon and get a stopwatch to see how much
time. Yeah, seriously. I still have some save somewhere on it. But Final 9 had some really cool summons from what I remember, too. Like, I remember the Alexandria summon from Final 9 was really cool. I think that was supposed to be the long... If I remember correct, someone told me that was the longest one ever, but I still like it a lot.
Yeah, it was Bahamut was really cool, and I think Odin was in that one as well.
Odin's always been a fun summon in all the games. Odin was interesting in Final 8 because he was like, he wasn't one that you summoned, he was random.
Oh, okay.
There, in Final 8, they had random, like, you could obtain a guardian force,
mm-hmm.
but they would only show up every now and then when they felt like it. So it was just kind of, you'd be in a random fight, and all of a sudden Odin would come in, one-shot everything, you get the experience, and go.
Alright.
Doesn't happen. I don't think he showed up on boss... I think if he showed up on a boss fight, then he would, like, do something that would do a lot of damage, but it would not be an insta-kill.
Gotcha.
That was with Seven, too. I don't remember. It's been a while. But, so, I didn't have much to say about the summons of this. I just wanted to bring it up, because, one, I forgot about the Final 8 thing, and, two, the summons in all the games have been really fun.
Oh, absolutely. And the cool thing I remember from Final Fantasy IX is that I'm pretty sure... I think Garnett's the only... I think she's the only one that can do summons. Maybe her and someone else.
Erica.
That's right, Erica.
She's a summoner.
You
know what? I'm going to look at all the characters. I couldn't remember all the characters.
Yeah, I know there's another guy. It's not Red, but I always called him Red because he had red hair. And I liked Red from Final Fantasy
VII. I remember who you're talking about. Yeah.
I think it's Baron, maybe?
It's something like that. You know what? I'm opening up the strategy guide once again.
But, when you first learn you can do summons... You actually have a period where I think you can do most of the summons at once. Like, you have them all unlocked, like the basic ones.
His name is Amarant Coral.
That's right.
And it's not Erica, it's Eiko.
Yep.
E-I-K-O Carol. Eiko Carol. Queen of Quen, which was the stupid, ugly, like, thing that you could find in the swamps.
Yep.
And she ate all the monsters. Yep. And you had Freya Crescent, who was basically your dragoon.
That's right, yep.
So you had a warrior, a black mage, a dragoon, a white mage, which was Garnet, Zidane, the thief. Yeah. Quina, what? She had blue magic, apparently, which is a new thing. Aika was, I guess she was considered your black mage.
Yeah, she was kind of like...
Oh, no, Vivi was your black mage. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Vivi was a black mage. She was like the summoner.
She was a summoner, and maybe also kind of like all around, kind of like... Wasn't like the old Final Fantasy? Wasn't a red mage like an all around? Like it could do white and black magic, but wasn't quite as powerful. Yeah. And then Amarant was, I don't know.
He was almost.
He's a bounty
thief.
Hunter.
Yeah, he was kind of a thief as well. He was kind of like the Vincent of Final Fantasy VII, I would say. But back to the summons, I remember when we first learned you can do summons. You can do the basic ones for a little bit and just get to try them out. But the queen removes them from Garnet. So you lose all the summons. So you know they're there. And you just want to get all of them back because they were awesome.
Mm-hmm. All the summons were really freaking sweet. I'm going to see if I can find a list of them, since we were talking about them. Mm-hmm. But I honestly, to God, could not remember half of them.
Yeah.
So, let me see what... some of her summons are Carbuncle, Fenrir, which is... Carbuncle casts Reflect, Haste, Protect, and Vanish on all party members. Mm. Fenrir causes Earth or Wind damage to all enemies. Phoenix causes Fire damage to all enemies. And all party members recover from KO. Medine causes holy damage to all enemies, and then let's see Garnet's. Get back.
Yeah, I think Garnet's had most of them. Like,
oh my gosh! Oh yeah, freaking Steiner could get sword magic, which is like outrageously overpowered against that kind of thing. Garnet's summons were Shiva, Ifrit, Rama, Atamos, Odin, Leviathan, Bahamut, and Ark. Just Ark.
Ark.
But, so, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of... I forgot how big this game was.
Yep. Yeah, there's so much to do in this game, which was the other really cool thing. Like,
I'm looking at the back of this. You can, on the back of this strategy guide, you can get from Squaresoft... Oh, sorry. PalisadesMarketing.com, you can get Final Fantasy IX lunchboxes and statues.
Yes.
It's so cool.
I need those lunchboxes.
Oh. And it also advertises the Parasite Eve 2 soundtrack in here.
Ooh.
Huh.
Excellent game as well.
Well, okay, sorry, go on.
But
fascinated.
Oh, man, there's so much to do in this game. Like, just exploring the cities. Like, back to the airships and seeing that cinematic for Lindblom, when you just barely make it in before they close the gates... That city was fantastic. Because they had the monster contest where you had to go around town. Like, they released all these monsters into the city.
I remember that.
And you had, it was like, I forget how much time you had. Maybe, I think it was like 30 minutes, actually.
It was a long time.
But you wanted to kill, like, the biggest monster. And I think you just got some prizes and it progressed the story along. But just, like, having that, like... Because any RPG you play, there's never monsters in the city. The city's the safe place. So to have this whole contest where the city willingly unleashes all these monsters...
It's like the running of the bulls or whatever.
Yeah.
But you have to fight them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Final Fantasy IX is not an open-world game by any stretch. Like, there's still limitations. Like, you need to first get the airship before you can go to other continents. You need to do this.
Well, like, even with Final Fantasy II that I'm playing right now, like, you can go around and explore the world, but, like, there are certain places you can't get to without, like there's a hovercraft in this.
Yep.
It's so weird that there's a hovercraft. Like, I don't know. That seems so much more far-fetched. Like, an airship, there's enough steampunk stuff out there that I'm like, I can believe that. But a hovercraft? I don't know. It's a little... But anyway,
that's not the point. At the time, that was their way of, you know, preventing you from going to certain areas. But having a place you could go with a thing in between a boat and an airship.
They did that in Final 7 as well. Yeah, exactly. They had the buggy.
Yep.
And then on top of that, even like the chocobos in Final 7, like you had one that could run in shallow water, one that could run in just mountains,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have the black one that could do shallow water and mountains,
yeah.
and then you had the golden one that could do everything.
Everything! But I remember one time I was playing 9, I was in this cave. I would say it was like early mid-game. It's maybe level 20. And I go out of the cave to a different part of the land. The first enemy I come across are like level 40 dragons.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about, too.
And it's just, nope, you went to the wrong place, you're dead.
And oh, I was my like, God, what? I remember that.
Like, no warden, no...
Oh, I do, I freaking... Oh, my God. I remember, I was trying... I went up there, I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. I'm like, why would they stick this here? And I remember I made it a vendetta once I hit high enough level to go back. I yeah. did it. I yeah. went back. I was like level 50. I'm like, that's right.
Yep.
It's in a chance.
I'm pretty sure the first time that happened to me, I didn't save for a little bit. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, why would you put that here? You evil.
Why not just put a wall?
But there
or
was
a locked door. I think it was in a cave, though, but still.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That. But this game, for me, like, being the first Final Fantasy I've ever played, I think it's a shame because, not to, like, blame 8, but I'm going to blame it anyway. like, 7 was such a great success. There's no denying that. It's the bestseller. I'm pretty sure it was probably the best-selling Final Fantasy game.
Well, it also, like, if you're thinking why it didn't quite appeal to, like, Final 9 kind of started dying in popularity, not because of the game quality, but because yeah. of its predecessors, it can also, not saying because it's a bad game by any stretch, but Final Fantasy Tactics. And it's not the game's fault. Like, I've never personally played it. Everyone tells me it's a great game and I need to try it.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is pretty fun.
The fact that people saw Final 7, and then the Final Fantasy Tactics came out shortly after that. And so everyone's like, new Final Fantasy? All these new fans to the series that just tried out 7, like, let's try out Tactics. And they're like,
this is what nothing. Is this? Yeah,
like, I don't understand.
Yeah, like, Tactics from Final Fantasy 7? Yeah, not the best release plan.
Then it didn't help when Final 8 wasn't nearly as good as 7 in terms of
exactly.
everything.
And then even though 9, which it's definitely my favorite, like
a lot of people agree it's the best one on the PlayStation.
Like, it kind of fell under the radar. And, but it's just, I think they took a lot of the things that made 7 so great, brought it back to basics. Because
and not too much. Like, it wasn't. Like,
yeah, it wasn't just, turn-based really, Final Fantasy 2 type thing.
I find it really... Well, it's still technically kind of turn-based.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
I find it difficult to, like, play older RPGs that are really heavy on the class, on the classes. Like, Final 9, they didn't come out and tell you, this is your white mage. They didn't right. beat you over the head with it. They let
you can only cure.
They let you figure it out, and they even gave them moves. Like, I remember, like, you could, like, if you did something a little differently, you could get Garnett to actually have some decent physical attacks. Nothing, yeah. nowhere near Zidane, nowhere no. near Steiner, nothing like that, but you could get some, like, decent stuff. And this one brought it back even where you can have four members in your party, as opposed yeah. to the 3, which was only in Final 8 and Final 7.
That's right.
And I remember that they would, what is it? Like, I think my go-to party was Zidane, Steiner, Garnett, and I think I went with Vivi for the Black Mage Mage. Because, like, Vivi and Steiner could get some really powerful, like sword moves together. Garnett would be your healer, and then Zidane, obviously, one, he's your main character, too. Even though he's a thief, he does just as much damage as Steiner does,
oh,
if
yeah.
not more. Zidane might as well have been a warrior that couldn't take as big of a hit as Steiner.
Exactly, yep. And the cool thing about Final Fantasy IX was they brought a lot of strategy back to it. Like, a lot of the bosses reminded me of Chrono Trigger. Like, you had to do specific things during specific sequences. Like, the first boss, for example, they throw you right into it. You can only, like, the chance you have to hurt it is when it opens its petals up. And then you could just wail on it. And, you know,
this is the first boss of Final Nine, sorry? Yeah. Yes, I was just trying to
remember. Yeah, sorry, I didn't clarify that. But, yeah, so, like, Final Nine, like, yeah, all the bosses have, like, strategies to them, like, which magic are they weak to, when can you use it, type of thing. Oh, first you need to, the evil twins in that game, they're like the jesters.
Oh, they were the right-hand men of the queen, I believe in that, right?
Yeah, and they, like, rhymed and stuff.
They were annoying.
Yeah, so annoying.
They would literally Yoda their twin. Yep. So, it'd be like, this is stupid. And then the next time would be like, stupid this is.
Yep.
And, or something like that. And I'm like,
ugh. Oh, my goodness. But I remember that fight not being, like, outrageously difficult. But you had to really put some thought into it.
Well, here what's funny for me with 9, here's how I beat it. I technically did not beat it on my own save.
This
is what happened. I made it up to the... Because Kuja is the final boss.
Yep.
I made it up... There's a guy you fight right before Kuja. I could not beat him. All I needed to do was level up. Like, I had a friend who was higher level. He said he went through with these. I went over to my friend's character on my friend's save file, and he didn't give me any sky. I just had his characters, and I just played them, and I beat the game I rebeat the save with his characters just to see the final cutscene.
Yeah.
And so, officially, I beat in everything minus the second to last boss. I beat the final boss and everything else before that without any help. I do remember there was a couple times in that game that I had to look up online, like, where do I need to go?
Because
some of the stuff I just remember playing, I'm like, I don't understand this.
There was... I can't remember what exactly it was. I don't think it was a summon, but it was, like, a secret... seller, like a secret, like you could buy items from him.
Or you think of like the hidden library in the game?
No.
Or was that Final? That was Final Nine. That was definitely Final Nine. There was a hidden library.
Dude. It was. I'm trying to think. I don't think you were underwater or anything. But he's like, it's near the end of the game, and this guy is just kind of behind a rock, and completely invisible to the screen. Like, he's completely behind the rock. No indication whatsoever. And I think if you run into him, you fight him. And if you beat him, I don't know if he gives you a summon and also, like, an option to buy goods from him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the more random things I've ever seen in a Final Fantasy game.
I'm going to see real quick if it mentions it here at all in this handy-dandy strategy guide.
Yeah, it's definitely before, like, Kuja and all that stuff. Like, I'd say it's, like, the section before that. But while you're looking that up,
it might be one of those things.
Yeah,
like,
go online.
Like, for example, for this is the boss fight, Tiamat. I think that's actually the one I got stuck on. I don't remember. No. I remember which one I got stuck on. But you fight Tiamat. It's like, for more boss fight tips against Tiamat, refer to play online. I'm like, ah. You can fight an optional boss at this point of the game to find out what to. To find out what to do, log on to play online.
That's horrible.
That might have been what it is.
Yep. Whoa, it's up.
All right, so type in the keyword OPT once you get... Oh, gosh, everything's popping up.
Welcome to the Final Fantasy XI official site.
No more 9? Who knows? We'll look it up later. It's not. We'll do it in the middle of a podcast.
Yeah.
So,
but play online is up. Although it's more like just Final Fantasy XI,
and it's still geared for the 800x600 screen. Because look at that.
Oh my goodness, this is fantastic.
But in any case, was there any? I have one last thing I wanted to cover. Was there anything else that you wanted to cover before we sign off for this one?
I would say, just to go back on the topic of internal conflicts, is that Dane had one of the most powerful ones that I've ever seen in any game. Because near the end, before you fight Kuja, there's, like, Zidane learns about his past, essentially, kind of like Cloud. And it throws him for a loop. Again, just like Cloud. And the way Zidane, they display this, Zidane, the area you find this out, you turn around, you start walking away from it. And as soon as you do, Zidane just has these flashes of all the other party members. Because at this point, it's just you as Zidane. None of the other party members are with you. So he just has these visions of all the other party members. And, like, they seem real to him. And he actually interacts with them. And, like, they're essentially telling him what he feels. Like, you know, like, how could you do this? You're a horrible person type of thing. And, like, the way they just styled it, like, you actually have to talk to the other, like, his imaginary versions
of the other party members.
And, like, how he thinks they will portray him after he learns about this. Like, it was just so well done. Because, I mean, not to get so therapy on everyone.
You mean like analytical?
Yeah.
Therapy?
Gonna get therapy on this.
Okay.
But yeah, that's really how we portray. Like, we always kind of project what we think people will think of us when we do something.
That's so true. I didn't even think about it like that.
Bam! Therapy on this podcast.
No, I even remember the one panel we went to at one of the conventions we go to, where they were talking about Final Nine and how they basically, what is it? They talk about existentialism in the game. Do you remember what he said? I can't remember.
No, I can't.
Kuja says something to Zidane, and what he says in response, it's like, why do you exist or something like that? And I think it's like, because we can?
Yeah.
Was that what he said?
Yes.
Was that it?
Oh, yes. It's the final battle. And yeah, it's something along those lines. Like, because he's like, I'm pretty sure, so, if you haven't played 9, don't listen to this part, but I'm pretty sure it's Zidane's backstory is that he is either a descendant or is part of Kuja.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't quite remember.
It's been a while, it's been a while.
Oh, man,
Sorry for, or he's looking it up, I think.
Yeah. So when he's fighting Kuja, there's the point, Kuja's just like, why are you doing this? Or, why do you think you can beat me type of thing? And Zidane just, best lie, just like, because I can. Mm-hmm. It's like, bam!
Or it's almost like, why not? Type of deal, like, why do you exist? Well, why wouldn't we exist?
Exactly.
I forget, it's the most
simplistic comment, but it's just so badass, because it's like,
I can't,
who would have the balls to just say that? Like, why not? Because I can. It's like, it's so good.
Let's see if it actually mentions it down here. Wikipedia is our best friend.
It really is.
But no, while he's looking that up before we wrap up and everything, the thing I wanted to cover was, I wanted to talk about the worlds itself, like the world itself of Final Fantasy IX. We already covered Lindblom a little bit, and Lindblom is one of the cool, like, the intro cinematic into Lindblom is one of the most memorable things in any video game, not just Final Fantasy, but video game I've ever played. It's got a beautiful cinematic of you, this gigantic gate opening up. And you see these giant walls of Lindblom from the outside as you're going in. And the inside, there's buildings everywhere, and you see airships flying around. And it's got this golden aura around it. And it is absolutely fantastic. The other part of the world, like, that whole continent there is just so cool because of the three warring nations. You have Lindblom, Alexandria, and, oh gosh, what's the third one? It's where Freya's from. Hold on, world map, save me now. You had Alexandria, you had Lindblom, and then you had, are you? Daguero. That's the name of their... that might not have been the... Oh, Bermesia. Bermesia, that's it. Bermesia, that was the third continent. Or the third country within that big continent. So you have... Lindblom, which is just this beautiful, absolutely gorgeous city. Then you have Bermesia, which is like the rundown thing, because Alexandria attacked it, I believe. But that was a cool cutscene, too, in that game, I remember. And then you had Alexandria. All the cities in each place were really cool to look at. All the towns and everything. My other favorite place, believe it or not, was a really tiny place called Trino. Trino was pretty much just the... It's pretty much just like the Las Vegas of this world. Like, yeah. It is like the seedy city, the seedy underbelly. Gangsters live there, mobsters and everything. And it is one of the coolest cities ever. That's where they have the card game. It's not the Triad thing from Final Fantasy VIII. It's under a different name. But it is hands down one of the coolest cities that I've had. Like, not one Final Fantasy had... No other Final Fantasy since then has... The world itself captivated my imagination more than Final Fantasy IX's world. And while I love 7 a lot, I love 8 a lot, I love 10 so far, 2 is really good. Even what I played at 13 was really cool, but it just 9's world was just so engrossing. Like, I was consumed by it. It was seriously, so good.
Yeah, like, every piece of the world had, you know, a story to it.
Mm-hmm. Like, there was so much backstory, even just the history of each country.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much to it. Like, 9 just had... While 8's my favorite, I think, 9, by far, was the best. On the PlayStation ones, I mean. Yeah. I mean, I can't say for the others, because I haven't played them all yet. I'm still in the process. But that's why we decided to focus exclusively on 7 through 9.
Oh, yeah.
One, Final Fantasy as a whole would be massive.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I haven't played all of them. So that's, one, a bad gamer thing to do. Two, it wouldn't be good to declare one the best ever if you haven't played the others. So, did you were able to find what you're looking for?
Could not find the quote, but just to clarify, Zidane is Kujo's brother.
Is that what it is?
Yes. So there's that, and yeah, just to kind of wrap it up, like,
For those who weren't listening, we did mention spoiler alert.
Yes,
we did say it. You can't be mad at us.
Yes, granted, so, it was like over an hour ago, but we did say
and it. You said it beforehand. Yes. In the final 9 section. So anyway, you're saying wrapping things up.
Yes, just Final Fantasy as a whole. Like, I've never met a series, maybe aside from like Zelda and a handful of other games, that just the world, the characters, the story. It just captivates you. Like, every twist and turn, like,
you feel like you're on this adventure with these characters.
Exactly. Like, just one final example in Final 9. It's early on, you go through the ice cave.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I just finished Ocarina of Time, or, you know, like, it was around that same era, and Ocarina of Time was one of my favorite games at that point. And going through an ice cavern, I was like, this is just like Ocarina of Time. And like, just
but being, better, because you're not sliding everywhere.
Oh, gosh. For the most part, I think there are some...
There was some slidey stuff in there, I don't remember.
And you just start tying all these worlds together, and you're like, oh, this reminds me of this, and... Like, your nostalgia is having its own nostalgia.
Your nostalgia is, like, losing its own virginity.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. How is that possible? But, I guess to wrap it all up, I can say this for myself so far. I don't know if I can... I think you agree with me on this, Justin. The PlayStation Final Fantasies are our favorites.
Absolutely.
Not saying they're the best. We can't... Like I said, I haven't played 3/6 yet. A lot of people say that's the best one. And I am so excited to get to it. Literally, the only thing stopping me is the collector in me, because I want to get it complete in box before I play. Final Fantasy 2, I don't have complete in box. But that was okay, because that wasn't like the big one. The big one's 3/6. Yep. I want that complete in the box, and I, by God, I'm gonna do it. So, to sum it all up, the Final Fantasies 7, 8, and 9, the PlayStation era, are some of our favorites. One day we will play at least I will play Tactics.
Tactics is really good.
And I will do a smaller episode on that just to, like, try it out. Like, I will play it all the way through, not just, like, let me get a good feel of it. I normally am not a huge fan of the battlefield, like, the tactical aspects. But I liked Advance Wars, and I know they're not the same in any way, shape, or form, like, other than the fact that they're both grid-based tactical RPG, not even... Advance Wars is not even that much of an RPG, but tactical based games like that, like grid based tactics games, I'm gonna give it a complete shot. Like, I can get a copy of it and I'm gonna give it a shot. But so yeah, to sum it all up, we love these games, and if you have not played it and you actually listened to the spoilerific episode of Still Loading, well, one, shame on you for ruining some of these things. Two, go and play them now.
Go play them, because they're so worth it. The graphics might not stand up the test of time.
Definitely not 7. 7, yeah. 7 is charming if you grew up with it.
Yeah,
but if you look back at it, it's a little...
But honestly, do yourself a favor and look past the graphics and just enjoy them.
Yes, so... Alright guys, until next time, I'm Josh.
This is Justin.
And have a good week.
Peace.